The state funeral is over. The long procession through London has concluded. In a final chapter of the 10 days of official mourning, Queen Elizabeth II will be interred at Windsor Castle. NPR correspondent Eleanor Beardsley is there and joins us now. Eleanor, explain the significance of this place, Windsor Castle, to the Queen.
Okay, well, Rachel, she spent her weekends here. This was said to be her favorite residence. It was a place where she could relax from her busy schedule and be surrounded by family because they all live close by. For example, William's house, Kate, their family, they're like a 10-minute drive. Also, she grew up here. Her girlhood was spent at Windsor. She spent the war years here. She actually made her first radio address from here in 1940 at the age of 14 to the children of London who had to be evacuated from the Nazi bombing of London. And she and her sister Margaret waited out the war here as well. She loved the vast grounds and the nature, the ancient trees and forests. She rode horses here at Windsor into her 90s, people say.
We hear a plane going overhead, so much pomp and circumstance,
security. There's a lot security. Of plane traffic from Heathrow.
It is such a highly choreographed day, Eleanor, right? I mean, every detail has been planned for years. People have been waiting there where you are, Eleanor, at Windsor Castle, to see the end of the royal procession. Describe what happened there.
Yeah, they came out to see the Queen's coffin as it made its last trip down what's known as the Long Walk. And this is a 2.5-mile avenue that cuts through the immense Windsor estate to the Windsor Castle gates. And there were tens of thousands of people along this grassy, tree-lined promenade to see the Queen pass by for the very last time, her coffin in the hearse, accompanied by all these regiments of soldiers. And I spoke with Beverly Robinson, who got up at 5 a.m. to come see this.
We've come from Nottingham. I'm with my son and my two granddaughters. It's kind of a once in a lifetime thing. She's a queen, always been our queen, and going to be our only queen because it'll be kings after that. So I felt it was a privilege to come.
Interesting to hear that particular reflection. Mm-hmm. The Queen will be buried in St. George's Chapel. I mean, its history goes back nearly 500 years, includes both royal weddings and funerals. Her husband's, in fact, Prince Philip, his funeral was held there last year, right?
Rachel, it was. He died last year, and I don't know if you remember those striking images of the Queen all alone at his funeral, wearing black and wearing a black face mask because it was in the midst of the COVID pandemic. That's right. But Philip was, he's actually been sort of on hold in a royal vault. His body will now be moved to lay with hers. So the love of her life, her husband of 73 years, she will be laid to rest with him in the family chapel this evening.
And it'll be, as opposed to the great ceremony of today at Westminster Abbey, tonight will be a far more intimate, family-centered affair, correct?
That's right. There's going to be the royal family and close friends and those who served her and also, leaders of the Church of England. It's going to include her favorite hymns and prayers. And Rachel, there's going to be some important gestures that will take place at the end of the ceremony, a very symbolic gesture. The crown jeweler will remove the crown, the scepter, and the orb from her casket to separate the queen from her crown for the last time. And then this evening, very late, there will be a completely private ceremony of only her family. And after that, she will be put into the vault alongside her husband and also her parents and her sister, Margaret.
NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reporting from Windsor Castle, where Queen Elizabeth II will be interred later today in a private ceremony. Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you, Rachel.
President Biden has once again said that the U.S. military would be called on to defend Taiwan in the event of an attack from China. In an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes, Biden gave the firmest commitment yet when asked if U.S. forces would defend the island.
Yes, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack.
It's not the first time he's made a comment like this, but it takes on greater meaning as tensions between these two superpowers, China and the U.S., have heightened in recent months.
We've got NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez with us this morning. Franco, what more did the president say to CBS?
You know, Rachel, as part of a lengthy interview that he gave to 60 Minutes while he was at the Detroit Auto Show last week, I was actually on the trip. You know, they spoke about a number of topics, including inflation and U.S. support for Ukraine. But Biden made it clear that he saw things differently in regard to U.S. support for Taiwan than he did support for Ukraine, where, as we know, he said repeatedly that U.S. forces would not fight Russian troops on Ukraine soil. You know, here's more of his discussion with 60 Minutes host Scott Pelley.
So unlike Ukraine, to be clear, sir, U.S. forces, U.S. men and women, would defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion.
Yes.
You know, he's asked more than once about this, and he was pretty unequivocal.
But this has happened before, right? It's not the first time Biden said the U.S. military would come to Taiwan's defense. And then every time he does it, the White House responds quickly, saying that this is not a reflection of a new policy. How are White House staffers, I guess, responding to the president's remarks?
Right. It has happened several times. And the White House told me the same last night, very quickly, I'll add, that policy toward Taiwan hasn't changed. Officially, U.S. policy maintains diplomatic relations with China rather than Taiwan, though there are obviously robust unofficial relations with Taiwan. You know, I will add that the Beijing government has responded. The Chinese foreign ministry said that China has lodged a formal complaint with the United States and also warned Washington against sending the wrong signals to what Beijing calls Taiwan independent separatists.
I mean, in a relationship like this, Franco, a geopolitical relationship, every word matters, every message, anything could be misinterpreted. What do you think is especially significant about what he said?
Well, you know, for decades, the U.S. has officially maintained a, quote, strategic ambiguity policy toward Taiwan, keeping up friendly relations with the island without those formal diplomatic relations. But comments like Biden send really confusing signals. And as we know, it keeps happening, stoking a lot of controversy and sharp responses from Beijing. It's also about the timing. Tensions between the two nations are at its highest in years. Beijing was angry and cut off some bilateral relations, including climate talks, after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's recent visit to the island. You know, it just is getting to a point where leaders have grown very worried about mistakes happening that could lead to things spiraling out of control.
NPR's Franco Ordonez. Thank you so much, Franco. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel.